Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips and the PC. It is Saturday, the 27th day of May, Anno Domini 2023, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
One week away.
1 week off, and you forget how to do anything. Talk to the mic.
I forgot your mic. I forgot to get the headphones out, but I'm going to get the stream up and running first.
Okay, that's nice. And it's 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. And remember, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll free 800-790-0415.
At least the phones are working this week.
You guys had a little trouble last week.
Trouble? They were dead. I mean, not just here in the, in the studio. The whole building, the phone system was out. Because I even went out to the front desk and everywhere. Nope. No phone service whatsoever.
That's the best kind of show right there.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah. On June 13th, when the June 2023 security update lands, the Windows 10 21H2 Home Pro, Pro Education, and Pro Workstation editions will lose servicing and support, which means they will stop receiving security and preview updates to protect against security threats. That's Windows 10 21H2. Even if you're happy to keep using Windows 10 21H2, Microsoft will be updating consumer and non-managed business devices at the end of servicing to 22H2 automatically. Let me repeat that. Microsoft will automatically update you to 22H2 if you're running Windows 10 21H2. There's no word when this upgrade will take place, and you can't stop it. Windows 10 version 22H2 will be the final version of the operating system, though it will continue to receive security updates until October 14th, 2025. Enterprise users get a few extra years, but they pay for it, and it only is for enterprise users. Anyone still using Windows 10 after that date will likely need to get patches from third-party groups like Zero Patch or just Go Commando. While Microsoft is forcing Windows 10 version 22H2 on those using the out-of-date version, it would much rather see people move to Windows 11. The Redmond company stopped selling licenses for Windows 10 Home, Pro, and Workstation back in January, though this only applies to digital downloads of Windows 10 bought directly from Microsoft's site by consumers. There are still plenty of third-party retailers selling downloads and physical copies, including OEM copies of Home and Pro available on Amazon, and many sites are still selling product keys for low prices. Windows 11 is gaining global market share, hitting an all-time high of 23.01% in May. That's a high for Windows 11. That's very low for Microsoft, according to StatCounter. But Microsoft is likely disappointed to see that 11 is so far behind Windows 10's 73.46% share, its highest since March of 2022. It's a more positive story for Microsoft among gamers. The latest Steam survey shows that 33.39% of participants use Windows 11 compared to 61.21% of Windows 10 users. Moreover, the older OS has seen its share drop drastically over the last few months for gamers. And if Microsoft can force upgrade you from 21H2 to 22H2, what's to stop them from force upgrading you to Windows 11?
Again.
Nothing. That's a good question. Poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft will force upgrades to Windows 10 22H2. Your choices are, I'm already there, bring it on, this is an outrage, meh. Wait, you're still using Windows? And I love all these choices. So far, we've got 51 votes. I'm already there is in the lead. And of course, if you have more to say about this, you can either join us in the chat at soundbites.org/chat, or you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free 800-790-0415.
Now, I have a problem with that.
Yes, you do. Oh, you're talking about Windows. Yeah, go ahead.
That would take a whole nother
wrong show.
Yeah. I just got that other computer back in October. New machine. And it's already gotten a notice from Microsoft says, sorry, this one doesn't qualify for or isn't capable of handling Windows 11. Sorry, you have to stay with Windows 10.
See, whenever I see that notice, what I actually read is, congratulations, you can upgrade this machine to Linux.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, that's right now it's just running. It's in my ham room and it's just running ham products. You know, I mean, ham radio is.
Yeah. Dave is into ham radio. Those of you just tuning in, he doesn't make pork products. He's.
Yeah.
The wrong kind of ham room.
Right. So the software I'm using doesn't use the internet. It uses the airwaves, which, you know, by simply hooking up a wire and hanging it out onto a tree and then hooking it up to my radio, I talk to people all over the world and use software on this machine for Windows 10. So I don't need, to worry about it getting infected and all this other junk because it's not tied to the internet.
Well, the other thing that Microsoft is going to start doing, their Microsoft 365 and Outlook.com mail servers are going to stop accepting mail from out-of-date Exchange servers.
Right.
Forcing you to upgrade and pay Microsoft for a new Exchange.
Yep.
Which is going to be more likely than switching to Linux.
Right, right.
Or some other hosted mail service.
Right.
And they're claiming that's to protect the internet. Well, okay, yeah, because an out-of-date Exchange server, in fact, an in-date, up-to-date Exchange server is a danger to the internet.
Well, that is
because
true.
Because there are so many problems. But it's a danger to Microsoft's bottom line. You didn't buy, so this is for Exchange 2002, 2008, 2010, and 2013 just went off support. It's a danger to their bottom line because you didn't buy a new version of Exchange yet.
Hello? That's very true.
Yeah.
Actually.
So they're saying that. Well, that's what we have to do to be safe. So they're going to send they're going to bounce a message back to the sender. The sender's not going to know what to do with
that. They don't know what to do with that. They need to bounce a message to the administrator.
Right. And they don't have to stop accepting the mail. They could bounce a message saying you've got a problem and accept the mail.
Right.
But for a lot of people, their software is still working fine. And probably the person that was originally managing it is gone. But there was never any notice. Well, I guess this is the notice now. So how can Microsoft retroactively go back and change your license from 10-year-old software saying that you have to buy new versions now? Going forward, anyone using Exchange Server can expect this to happen in the future.
Right.
Which may be a big mark about not using Exchange Server.
Right.
They're just unilaterally saying to old servers, we're not going to take mail anymore because it's a threat to the internet.
Well, I know a number of companies that have gone to Gmail.
Mm-hmm.
It's cheaper. Yes, you pay for it. If you're a company, you pay, what is it, $6 a month per person or something along that line?
Which is probably cheaper than a Microsoft client license.
Well, that's exactly right. That is exactly correct.
And messing up your machine.
And then Microsoft deals with spam.
Yeah.
Rather, Google deals with spam so well. And you can get your mail anywhere and, it's et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, absolutely.
For a while, it was very common to host your own email. And until they realized that takes administrators.
Yes.
So now it's getting to be very common. Let someone else host your email.
I did that at RIT in the Saunders College for many, many years. We had Tom was the administrator, not me, but. He worked for me and he did a great job. And it meant that, at the time, we gave our users features that nobody else could give. Unlimited, lots of spam filtering, yada, yada, yada.
Exchange still has a 100 gig mailbox limit.
Yes, it does.
Which is enough for average emails. But if you're sending pictures around, and a lot of our clients are sending high-res pictures, graphic arts people,
there's 50 gig
nothing.
Right there.
Yeah. Yeah, 100 gigs in a week, if you're lucky.
Yeah, yeah. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. Hi, Fred. What's up?
Hey, welcome back.
Thanks. Yeah, you're our first caller in 2 weeks, actually.
I've got actually it's probably not a question that you can, there's nothing to fix, but maybe you can answer some questions about my email. So I got an email that said the title was confirmation, and I've been doing some purchasing, and so I kind of expected some confirmations. But it's telling me that my iCloud storage is full. And it's sent to an email address that is not mine. It's got my first name. It's got my first name and then another one with my first name. And it's AOL.com is who it's sent to.
Did you used to use AOL.com?
Never in my life.
So how are you getting this message if it's not to your email address?
Well, it may be to multiple people.
Okay. So it's probably fake then.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm sure it's fake.
Oh, definitely.
I'm pretty sure it's fake because I don't have iCloud.
Then it's fake.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. Here's the deal, Fred, and this is for everybody listening. If you get any kind of email that says your something is something, right? If you don't have that thing, it's spam. Just ignore it. If you do have that thing, go check it before you click on anything in that email.
Right. I'm well aware. You've drummed that in pretty good.
Yep.
Good.
Yeah. So on your iPhone or on your Mac, you can check your iCloud settings to see how much storage you actually have.
Well, I have pCloud.
Right.
And I have Google.
Right. And so this is spam, and they're just trying to catch people.
My concern is, how is this in the 2 and the CC? Both are an email address that I've never had, an AOL account that I've never had.
Because that's how mail works.
Well, what you might try doing is sending a message to that AOL address.
Okay.
And see if it comes to you. It is very possible that the person who created that account has a forward that they screwed up.
But it could also be there were 1,000 messages, 1,000 email addresses in the BCC field that you can't see, and your real address was in the BCC field.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they send it to every Fred they could think of.
Okay.
So that's more likely.
Yeah. The one that's probably got it.
Yep. Although I have seen people that just assume I've got, fred@gmail.com, so, fred@microsoft.com will work too, right?
Right. So one of the things that everybody should do is when you send around those lists of things you think are cute that most other people don't, put everybody in the BCC list, because I don't need everybody knowing my email address.
Blind carbon copy for anyone that remembers carbon paper.
Who remembers paper?
Yeah.
So you're probably in the BCC.
Oh, okay. There's no way to identify that, no way to block that?
No, not – well, you can block the sender.
But you'll never get a message from that same sender again, probably.
Right. So
probably
if that's not a person you care about, go ahead and block them.
Okay. Can I do that easily, or do I have to create a...
What program do you use to get your mail?
I'm using Google's Gmail, Google app.
Okay, in Gmail, you can open up a message, and I think it's in the little three dots area.
Okay.
You can block the sender. I believe that's where that is in that one.
I'm looking it up now. You might even be able to right-click or tap and hold on the sender's address.
Yeah, on Gmail.
Oh, yeah, maybe that.
On Gmail, you can select it, and then up at the top, there's this little thing that looks like a stop sign that you can click on and say the market is
spam. No, he's on the app.
Yeah, not in the app, but I do have a block user.
Yep. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. That'll do it.
That's the same?
Yeah. It's the same thing. Yep.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna shoot out an email. I don't know if I want to shoot out an email to those addresses.
Well, you can't if they're in BCC.
But the ones that are in the two field, yeah, you can say your email address has been compromised. Someone's using it for spam. There's nothing they can do either.
With the only email address that's been compromised is the from address.
Yeah.
And their two addresses, they just keep make stuff up, and some of them hit and
keep
some of them
adding
don't.
More and more, and send another one, add another 100 names.
That person is probably already getting hundreds of bounce messages for mail that can't be delivered.
Right.
And it goes back to who it says it's from. And so we get calls like that all the time. I'm getting all these messages saying that they can't be delivered, and I didn't send it. Well, someone used your email address to send it.
Email is not secure. One of the things, I work with a company that does stuff and people sign up. And there are a lot of spammers who sign up in an attempt to break into the system. So far, no one has been successful. Thank you very much. But they try. And so, you know, I get a lot of bounce messages. I mean, a lot of bounce messages. And there's nothing you can do but ignore them. They're making up addresses. And some people are getting a, you know, here's your code. Go ahead and click. And other people, it just bounces because that address doesn't exist. And there's nothing I can do about that. I can't stop people from signing up with fake addresses.
So this is what you're talking about is a whole other email server?
Yeah, in my case, it's a separate server. But the basic idea is email is wide open. And you know, if I guess that your name is fredsmith@gmail.com, I can send an email. I'm sure there is somewhere a fredsmith@gmail.com and a Fred Jones and a Fred Thompson and a, you know, just pick every Fred you can find and send them all email. And this is, you know, this is the thing where you hit one out of 1,000, but it costs you nothing.
Right. Okay.
Because you're probably stealing someone else's email address and email server.
Well, what they're doing is saying you've got iCloud confirmation problem.
Yeah.
So click here. They've recreated the iCloud look.
Please enter your username and password.
And now they've got it.
Yep.
And depending on how smart they are, they could even then, they can try to log in themselves, and Apple will send you the two-factor code.
Right.
And they can ask for it, and you think that you're really doing it, so you send them the two-factor code, and then they're really in.
Yep, exactly right.
Got it, yeah.
And that can work not just with Apple, but any service like that.
Right.
You know, Google and FedEx and anyone, they can mimic a two-factor login. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, two-factor is great, but if you are trying to log into a fake site, it doesn't help any because it's a fake site and they get your real two-factor.
For everyone listening, if you get a two-factor authentication notice and say, put it in here, but you weren't trying to log in anywhere, it's fake. Don't do it.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. So you had mentioned something about email not being secure. Is Gmail to Gmail?
What I mean by that is that there's currently no real way to verify a sender.
Okay.
Yes. If I send you Gmail from my Gmail account, it is encrypted on my machine, sent encrypted through Google, and sent to your machine before it gets decrypted. So it is secure. Yes.
Okay.
But what I mean is, if I knew your actual email address, I could send email as you all day long with the right spoofing software.
Yeah, it's very easy to send email on someone else's address. Just like a postal message, you can put anyone's return address on there. It doesn't have to be yours.
Okay. Got it.
And that's what the bad guys do. They pick some poor person as the return address just to hide themselves.
Right.
Well, I've gotten that with phone calls.
Yep.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
I got a phone call I didn't recognize, and I let it go, and then I dialed it back, and some person answers that's like totally bewildered.
Yep. If you're really unlucky, they can randomly pick one of your friends. There's only 10,000 combinations in an exchange.
Right.
So the phone can say it, the call ID can say it's coming from someone you know, and it's not because the bad guys spoofed that phone number.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so I called that number, and the person said, I haven't used my phone all day. So it's like, okay. Yep. So somebody's using your phone number.
The FCC is working on things to stop that, to have verified senders, but they're taking their time. It's the shaken and stirred protocols that, well, 5 years ago now were they implemented, and no one's using them.
So I know several people.
It takes one bad guy to not use the real standards. Yeah.
Right. I know several people who've tried to start secured email. The problem is you either have to charge a certainly decent amount of money.
It's like Proton Mail.
Right. Hmm. Or it's not going to work. And it's I can send verified email to people by encrypting it with various protocols and then giving the other person my public key. And only the person with my private key, me, can send a message that can be decrypted with my public key. So that would work. The problem is that is not a thing that the faint-hearted can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're not a computer guru, it's hard to do that. I've done it with some people. And if, you know, the guys who worked for me who were technically very adept managed it. And lots of other people don't. So until something comes along that is a real standard and easy to use, we're not going to see email secure anytime soon.
Oh,
verifiable.
Yeah. The
It seems like it was pretty simple when you explained it, and it would be really handy for somebody like my banker or my accountant. Or a family member that I want to send something back and forth to that.
Right, but remember, everybody has to do it simultaneously or they don't get your email.
That's why a lot of banks and real estate, they'll have you log into a secure website so you can upload the form.
Right.
Because that's a lot easier to implement for the end user, too.
Uh-huh. Well, I get my taxes done by an accountant that sends me a encrypted PDF.
Right.
And I have to use a password for that.
Right. So he's got to send you the password in a different path. So if he emails you the PDF and emails you the password, that's not safe.
No, it's a password that was given to me when I saw in person.
Yep.
See, that's different. But the problem is, how many people do you email that you have never seen in person?
Not that many, really.
But some.
Yeah, there are some, yeah.
Only takes one.
It only takes one. And many of them are businesses. So it's just never – email is a great idea. It is not a securely thought-out idea.
Right. Okay. Well, for now, I'll just block this user.
Yep,
that's the way to do it. Anytime you get something like that, just block the user.
Delete this email and carry on. I just was, you know, I was really from all the teaching that you've done on the air over the years, I recognize it as a spoof. I recognize it as a spam.
Excellent.
But I was still curious as to how my name didn't actually even show up in it, and then I didn't ever thought of the BCC.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's totally makes sense now.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Fred.
So much. Okay.
All right. We are going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and your phone calls, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Right here on the truly great and member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a couple of minutes.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I don't know. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Maybe at our other station.
Weekdays, maybe.
Swing Jazz.
Weekdays, yeah. At 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Brian from Gates, New York on the line. Hi, Brian. What's up?
Not much, but a cautionary tale. 2 weeks ago, I suddenly had trouble with my internet connection, my video feed, streaming, all like that. It would be fine for an hour, 2 hours, maybe 20 minutes, and then everything would drop off, just stop. And then you wait 2 hours, reboot the machine, everything's back. So I finally called my service provider, my fiber service, and described the problem to them. They said, well, that sounds like the router problem. Here's the number for customer service for that, for the router that they suggested that I get like 3 years ago. Okay, I called the router company. Well, I spent over 2 hours online, on hold, waiting, until a tech came and described the problem to them and said, hell, I'll do this, do that, do the other thing. That was another hour of flirting around, doing all this stuff, and nothing. It didn't work. Nothing they said did work. Now, the next day, after a night without cable, so what did I do? I put in a DVD, all right?
Yeah.
The technicians from my cable company show up, my service feed. They say, let's take a look. And they go up on the gutters, and they look at the wire coming in, and says, hey, have you had a big storm here? A limb come down? Not particularly. When did this start? They said 2 days ago. Well, looks like you got a kink in your cable.
Yep.
They straightened
well,
up.
Well, if they'd know, I could have told them that.
Yeah. Well, it magically, everything came back, and it's stable. It hasn't had a problem since.
One of the things.
Why couldn't the guys from ASUS tell me this?
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that you can try, and sort of advice for anyone, if when there's a problem, you always have to isolate where the problem is. And so and companies like to play pass the blame. So the internet provider blame the router company. So what you do is you take the router out of the equation, take one computer, hardwire it to the internet box, you know, the fiber router, the cable router, you know, the telephone modem, whatever it is. And if the problem still occurs, you know it's not the wireless router, it's the internet router. And then that's something you can tell them. It doesn't work when I have one computer connected to your service. It's got to be your service.
Right.
Because
that's usually what they do. They'll send the technician out, and they'll plug their computer directly into their hardware, and works fine. So it's your router. Give me $100.
Exactly.
Fortunately, when they got here, they unkinked the wire, and they came back down. It took them less than 5 minutes.
Yep.
Everything works fine. Thank you very much, sir. Enjoy your service. Bye.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I didn't get charged for it, but you know.
Right. I wonder how you get that kink in the cable.
I haven't heard it's got that much slack.
Wires, animals.
Have you been zip lining off that cable again?
Absolutely. It's the best time in my backyard, you know?
Sure, exactly.
Some of the high winds we had a little while ago.
Yeah.
Whipped it around, then it just didn't notice it until it got so severe.
Right.
That it interrupted service.
Yeah, after that last big windstorm, the Frontier wire at my house came down and was hanging on the ground and then into the driveway. There was a tree holding it up, so the car didn't hit it. But we kept trying to call Frontier to report the problem, but we're not Frontier customers, so they wouldn't talk to me.
Right.
Okay, your wire's going to get hit by the lawnmower pretty soon. You might want to come get it before it causes more problems.
Right.
Eventually they did. But, so it was leftover wire.
Well, I knew this would sound familiar to Nick.
Yeah.
The squirrels in the backyard chewing the wires.
Right, that's what I was thinking. But it worked. They straightened out the cable, and they went away, took a little ladder, and said, bye. And I said, bye, thank you very much.
That's as long as it's working again. Now you know if it happens again, call them up. Go take a look and see where the kink is.
And maybe get them to replace that wire now.
Well, I was just thinking that, too.
Yeah, so if there's that much slack.
It's a fiber optic cable. It's not an electrical wire, but we're so used to saying wire.
Well, in his case, it may be a coax.
Right. Yeah.
Depends on the service.
But still in all, for it to get up and to twist that much, even with a high wind, that much slack in it, it's got to have one heck of a lot of slack that it can go up and go around to get a knot in it. Because that's basically what you're doing.
Well, but it's very possible that there was that much slack in it. I've seen, you know, in my house, one of the wires that they put up, I told you, every couple of years, they have to replace one of my wires because the squirrels eat it. And there have been times it was nice and taut. They measured off just the right amount of wire.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it looks like the slack wire at the circus.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, it's hanging down a foot and a half. So I get it. I get it.
Yeah, the wire goes up right at the break of the gutters. My mother is banging it on the gutter in that high wind.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's right where they said the kink was. So.
Right. That makes sense. All right, thanks. Gentlemen.
Thank you. Enjoy.
Have fun with your little kinky wires. This just points out at what Steve was just saying. It's so hard to pinpoint where the problem is these days. Oh, I'm having trouble with my Wi-Fi. Okay. Is it your laptop? Is it your router? Is it the router coming in from the provider? Is it the line to the outside? You have to do a lot of checking to figure out where the problem actually is these days. And it's not just that. It's like my screen isn't running. I can't see anything on my screen. Okay, is it on? Is the brightness up? Is the cable plugged in? Is the cable frayed?
Yeah. Is the computer on sending a signal?
Is it sending a signal? Is it if you know? Can you plug some other monitor into it? Can you try a different cable? Half of what makes computer stores so good at fixing things, they have lots of things to swap in and out and try with.
Yep.
I had that problem just a few months ago. I suddenly had nothing on my screen. Okay, where's the problem? Luckily, I had bought my daughter a new screen, a new monitor, which she moved and didn't need anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I had it sitting around. I plugged it in, and that was the problem. The monitor had died. That was the problem. Instant fix. How would I have known that if I didn't have an extra monitor?
Yep.
So, yeah, it's a problem all the way around, and I get
that. And that's often one of the reasons why a service, you take a computer in for service, can take so long.
You know, right.
Well, the screen doesn't work. That should be an easy fix. Well, it could be any of 100 things, and I got to try them one at a time until I find it.
Right. Never change two things.
If it's the 99th thing I try.
Right, exactly right. And that takes a certain amount of expertise, and you pay for that time and expertise. There's no way around that.
Mm-hmm. And when they say it should be easy, then why didn't you fix it?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's always the dichotomy between I don't know anything about computers, and it should be easy.
I once had a guy, I bought a Volkswagen Bug, loved it, and it stopped running at one point, and I was just sitting there looking at the engine. This guy came up and said, I can fix that for $5. I said, I'll pay that $5. He said, you will? I said, not for you to fix it, for me to see what you do, so I can fix it next time.
It's extra if you watch.
You're right.
20.
Back to the phones. It's not extra to listen to us talk to Doug from Holly, New York. Hi, Doug. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I got a Mac household, and I just upgraded my router. And the reason I got picked that particular one was because reviews were, you know, 5 out of 5 for parental control.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I discover MAC addresses and put them in profiles, and that's supposed to allow me to say how long or pause that device's internet connection.
Right.
So first thing is the one child keeps figuring out my password, my Wi-Fi password. And the other thing is that devices have that private Wi-Fi turned on, and so the MAC address changes all the time.
Yeah, the security of having your MAC address randomization is hard when you're doing MAC address filtering.
Okay. And that's basically the plan when you make these profiles up and put in specific addresses.
Yeah.
You're filtering.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm at my wit's end with trying to control their access. Is there doesn't seem to be a way, I did some research on it, doesn't seem to be a way to keep that private Wi-Fi selection turned off. It seems like every time they, you know, connect to another network and then come back, it's turned back on again for whatever reason. I turn it off, and then the next time I look at their device, it's turned back on again. I'm not sure if they're doing it or if it's doing it by itself. But
you might want to look at a different position for the parental controls. Instead of blocking Wi-Fi, you could block the programs they're using. So yeah, don't let a web browser run. Don't let a game program run after 9 o'clock. It's a lot of times it's easier just to turn off their internet at 9 o'clock.
What kind of devices are they using where they can change the MAC address?
It's pretty much in the OS. It's a MAC household. They're all iPods and iPhones.
Yeah. MAC address randomization is built into the OS now to add security when you're
remove security.
Well, it's adding security because then no one ever gets your real MAC address.
Well, what if they aren't admins on their devices?
I don't know if that would.
Yeah, you can turn. I'm looking now on my phone. You can turn on parental controls on the phone.
It's like screen. What is it called? Screen something.
Screen time.
Yeah.
And so that also lets you choose how long apps and what apps can be used.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a setting for. I'm trying to find it on my screen here. There is a setting for administrative type functions where they can't change anything without having the screen time password.
Right.
Then you just have to make better passwords.
Right. What I've noticed too is from time, this has been ongoing for some time now, and I've noticed that when you hit the information button for that specific Wi-Fi network, that they can actually touch where the password goes, and then it shows up the password, which is, I think, how they're discovering it. But
is that on your router?
No, on the devices. and I think what I've read was that it's part of sharing an iCloud account or something to that effect.
Yeah, they used to hide the password of the Wi-Fi you're connecting to, but now as an admin, I can see it.
Not admins on their devices.
Yeah,
that's the way. That's going to be the thing you have to do.
Yeah.
Okay. How about one other question I had was contemplating using a password managing software.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was to try to use the router password with that password manager.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that they would not be able to access unless they knew the manager or software?
Here's the thing. With the password manager, mm-hmm. Key thing there is you've got to come up. Password manager will create passwords that no way those kids in this lifetime are going to figure it out.
And they're generally intended for websites. You'd have to.
I use one for my router.
Your Wi-Fi connection.
And my Wi-Fi connection.
Okay.
But the thing is, you can put anything in a password manager. The thing about a password manager is where does that password manager live and what is its password itself?
That's the key. Password's got to be unique and hard to, kids can't correct. Figure it out.
And the kids correct. Can't figure it out, and then it has to be on some device that they don't have access to.
Okay, great. So if I, again, I'm just a Mac household, I have a Mac Mini that I use, and the password managing software would work through that.
Yes. Well, anytime you want to log on to your router,
mm-hmm.
you do it on the device that has the password manager, and then the password manager can you can either copy and paste, or it depends on what software you're using. but you can get the password into the actual router itself. Now, as far as that is concerned, again, as Dave was saying, you can make a 64-character password.
Mm-hmm.
In the you don't care what the password manager, what the password is.
Right.
You want it to be long and complex so that they can't guess it.
And just have the password for, you know, using that or changing that.
Your master password for, say, like NPass. You want that password to be hard, unique, and only you and your wife know it.
Right, right. Okay.
And then the passwords that you create in that password manager can be huge, long, 64-character, giant.
No one's ever going to know, right?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you can turn off the MAC address randomization in the settings on the phone, and then turn on screen time protection for changing system settings. So then they can't change it back on, and then they can't get in to see any of the settings in order to change anything without your screen time passcode.
Okay.
Then you just have to make your screen time passcode
something
unguessable.
Unique. Yep.
Okay. So the password managing software, some of them come with multiple devices.
Well,
so,
yes. Some of them, for example, one of the ones we recommend is NPASS, E-N-P-A-S-S. Mm-hmm. And that lets you store your already encrypted database anywhere you like. So you can store it on Google Drive or iCloud or Microsoft OneDrive or whatever they call it this week, or Box or Dropbox or, you know, anywhere. And when you log in and add a password or change a password, it gets saved already encrypted to that service, and then all your other devices that access that service get all the latest passwords.
Okay. All right. So if the individual devices can access the password managing software.
You put the password managing software on each machine. It's free.
Okay.
Or it's not. You pay for it. Depends on what you get.
Right.
But you put that on each device. Then when you log in, NPASS on Android, I know, lets me use my fingerprint.
Right.
Ain't nobody breaking into that without, you know, the science fiction kill me, take my finger, keep it warm and oiled, and all that nonsense. So I use my finger for that. Go ahead, take my phone. You still can't get my passwords without me. And so that's, you know, that's pretty secure. Secure enough for my purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What I've come to learn is, I'm in my 70s, and these children are in their teens. Or my grandchildren live with me.
Oh, yeah.
They're so much more aware of getting around. So they make it challenging.
Joke's not quite the right word, but, you know, when I'm in my 40s and my son is in high school, even middle school, they're doing stuff that we didn't even dream of doing in college.
Yeah, yeah.
When I went to college, and now, you know, they're building combat robots in middle school.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I know. I get it, Doug. It's harder and harder to do. It is possible, but you need to know how to do it.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that I thought was kind of weird with the iOS. So that, you know, you could have that Wi-Fi thing, you know, come on and, you know, just seemed like it defeated the purpose of. But anyway,
it does defeat your purpose, but it protects your security when you're out and about. You get a different MAC address on every Wi-Fi network you join, so no one can track you by your MAC address.
Right.
But when you want to track someone by their MAC address, that's
not a problem. Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Thank you, gentlemen, for your help.
I posted a couple of links on using screen time and parental controls. So screen time used to be called parental controls, but then they expanded it. So you can actually control how much time your kids use their screen. So you can say 2 hours a day of X, and that and then it won't work anymore.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Steve.
Yep. Thanks, Doug.
All right. You have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now, do you manage screen time from a central location, or is it right on the device?
You can manage it from any of your devices that you tell it this is a child device, and it lets you manage it through your Apple ID.
Okay, so I can go online and say Steve's iPhone is a child device, and now I can manage it from my laptop.
Yep. That was the plaintiff call at like 5 to 9 when Matthew was little. Dad, I need 10 more minutes. So on my device, I'd say, okay, give him 10 more minutes.
Yeah.
Now, he's got to, though, make them not administrators.
Well, there's no way to do that.
Oh, okay.
But you can lock administrative functions with a secondary password.
That's
the screen time password, where you can limit what things can do on the phone.
And then you just have to make sure that's not an easily guessable password.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah, create something with EnPass and have that do it.
Well, right. Except now EnPass is on their machine and you have to type it in and or you have to type it in and blah, blah, blah. But you can make not easily guessable passwords that are not terribly long or difficult to use. Yeah. My Wi-Fi password, I will tell you, is only, I think, 20 characters. And it's pronounceable.
Okay.
But not
guessable.
Not guessable, exactly. So you can do it. It just takes a little manipulation. For the longest time, a friend of mine used Aztec Gods. He was a history guy.
Quetzalcoatl.
Quetzalcoatl.
If you can even spell it, then you're welcome to my network.
Exactly. that was, you know, that's pretty secure. I'll say that's pretty secure. But then he had, there were just a lot of, that's a lot for, you know, when I took over his network, I had a cheat sheet. I admit it. until I changed all the passwords. But you can create passwords that are unique and hard to guess, without being, you know, 64 characters of yumpity puzzle. So, it's doable. And that's the beauty of a password manager like EnPass. It can create those things for you. You can make it create all words, all pronounceable words with numbers and symbols and capitals and lowercase, and it makes it hard to guess. All right, that music tells us we are done with the first hour of this show, but do not despair. There's an entire pristine, unused hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right, a whole nother hour of sound bites. That's another hour of Dave Enright, sadly, another hour of Steve Ray, and even more sadly, another hour of Nick Francesco, and of course, all of your phone calls. So you can give us a call, 585-966-5299, 800-790-0415. And we are going to take a quick bio break, but we'll be back on the other side with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a few.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition edition of Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And Nick will be back in just a couple of minutes. He had to step out for a few seconds. But I want to remind you folks, you know, pick up the phones. We got the phones working this week, unlike last week. We got them back up and got them going. So, you know, give us a call, 966-5299, or toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we'll get you on the air and get your questions solved. Just like Rich called in from Irondequoit. Go ahead, Rich.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, sir. Go ahead.
Regarding password managers, is there one of the managers out there that will remind you to log in and open up your manager when you go online? Or one must always be aggressive and remember, which I failed to do, to log in to my LastPass, for instance. Am I making that clear?
Pretty much all of the password managers will pop up whenever you try to log in somewhere.
Yeah, because it'll sit there and say, you know, it won't show, you know, like on a lot of them, it will have the password, you know, the password manager will try to, if it's active, will be there to fill in the spot, you know, where the password and that go, your username and password.
I'm not asking my question correctly. When I log on to my computer to pay a bill or whatever,
right?
I must go to LastPass first. There is no manager that will do a little pop-up and say, turn on your manager, right?
No, you don't have to go to LastPass first. LastPass will automatically fill in that password entry field for you.
So even if I have not gone to LastPass initially, it will do all of them will do that, fill it in?
Yes.
Automatically?
Well, don't they have to be running, you know, like a...
Well, yeah, you have to install a browser plugin so it knows to do that in your browser.
Yeah, oh, most okay. of them have an add-on, you know, an extension that you can install, like NPass has a an extension that you put into your browser program, so it will ask, you know, automatically go to your password manager and log you in with that list of passwords.
Okay. All right. I'm not too terribly happy with LastPass. I think I might try NPass, but I've already paid some money to LastPass.
Well, and also LastPass had a horrible breach a few months ago. Every single user's passwords were lost. So you need
to tell me that. Yes.
Yep, you need to change every password in your LastPass manager.
I would move to NPass first.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then change them all over there.
I wonder, can you export them out of LastPass and then import? Yeah. And then import them into NPass. NPass is great. And now, I don't know about you, but myself, I leave my computer running 24/7. The only thing I do is turn off the monitor. So my NPass is always running. You know, down in the toolbar is a TSA, terminate and stay resident program in memory, so that if I open up my browser, it's ready to go there, or if I'm opening up a banking program, something else, it knows my passwords. And it asks me for them.
Well, then let me rephrase it. So reiterate, the NPass, if I chose to change... Will NPass take all those passwords? I'm not using the correct terminology. Will NPass take the passwords from LastPass and fill them in?
You can export from LastPass to one of a number of different formats, CSV or whatever, and then import. And then what you want to do is take a look at LastPass export and NPass import. And see which formats are the same.
File extension.
Right. And then pick one of those, export from LastPass into that format, and then import into NPass in that format.
Wow. I don't know if I can do that, but...
It's easy. What you do is you go to LastPass and you say export, and you pick one of the formats... like CSV, and then in NPass, you say import, and you pick CSV again. You pick that same file.
Time out for a second. Could you please turn down your radio? Because it's coming back through.
Okay, continue.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Well, we're kind of done at this point.
I think I posted a link for that already, but I'll make sure and do it again if not.
Steve will, if there's no link up there, he'll post one. But there are. But in LastPass, you can say file export.
Okay.
Yes.
In NPass, you can say file import. So you export from LastPass, and then you import into NPass.
Got it. And all the passwords will flow through or transfer or whatever?
Yes. As long as you put them in the right fields, they will move over to the right fields.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, have Steve do what he said.
From January.
Yep.
Search for export and you'll find it.
Search for export, you'll find it in the list.
Thanks, guys, and I am a member.
That's what we like to hear. Thanks, Rich.
Bye-bye.
Of course, you should all be members. We know that. But, changing password managers is not necessarily difficult. Almost all of them have an export function, and almost all of them have an import function. So that's not – the real question is, have you used the right fields? Because in some of them, it can be a little confusing. But if you've used the right fields, you can move them all over. And in Rich's case, since he's using LastPass, he needs to change them all anyway.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if he imports them. He's going to be going through every one and changing them anyway.
He might as well just go ahead and just make a list of the names.
Right.
You know, or go ahead and import, you know, the list, but go through and have NPass regenerate every new one.
Right. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Marianne from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Marianne. What's up?
Hi. I wondered if you could help me out. I'm trying to remember the name of the site that you can go to where you can put in the channels that you want to watch on TV, and it'll give you one of the sites that lists that.
Yep, that's called suppose.tv.
SUPPOSE?
Yep, suppose you had a dedicated TV service with all the channels you liked on it. Let me see if that's on our link list. Yeah, then you can put in the networks you want to see, and it shows you the best packages for those networks that you want.
Okay, so, all right. So it'll ask you what networks, and you just put them in.
That can be the trickiest thing, because a lot of people don't know what network their show is on. They just know it's on Channel 8 or Channel 32 or whatever.
And that's the other thing. You got to usually it took me over a year. Because, you know, you got some because the programs, the way they do TV programs now, some of them just run from September to January and then they're done. And then others, you know, run from January to, say, May. They're done. And then there's the summer. That's a whole different breed of programs, too. And trying to remember what network and what program is still current and everything else can be a challenge.
Yep.
Okay, so it'll give you the current program that you're going to go into to get all those network stations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you put in, I want to be able to see TNT and TBS and Science Channel. And so it's telling me the best bet is Sling Blue for $46 a month.
Okay, all right. Okay, I can try that. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Okay.
Yeah, there's so many.
The one thing that I found is that I switched from cable TV to YouTube TV, but we're still paying for Netflix and Paramount and Disney.
Sound like your name.
So it doesn't matter what your TV service is.
Okay,
there
James,
are now so many places you get shows that aren't TV.
Right.
And so fortunately, my wife likes Disney movies, and I like Star Wars, so we get the Disney Channel. And she likes, fortunately, she likes Star Trek, so we get the Paramount Channel for all the Star Trek stuff.
Right.
And it's just weird. So you always end up subscribing to a channel because you want to watch something and then forgetting to unsubscribe, which is a big thing. In fact, there's an app going around now that you can get that you give it all of the subscriptions you have, and it will remind you to disable the subscriptions.
Nice.
Yeah, but I don't want to pay an app to do that.
Oh, you have to pay for the app.
Yeah.
I'll just write the code myself. All right.
Yes. Yeah. You sign up, especially when you do the free trial. Send up, 3 free months of Apple TV. Hey, Shlomo, remind me in 3 months to cancel Apple TV.
Right. Or just set a reminder on your computer.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
But luckily, call it Shlomo instead of randomly activating hundreds of devices across the internet. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Oh, yes. I have a question concerning the Revo uninstaller. What is the best site? Do I actually go to the Revo site to install that program?
And with any site, go to the official site to get the software. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, I know, because some of these different companies have us to download. But anyway, I'm looking at it right now. What is the difference between the Pro that you pay I know it's $25. That's not a problem. And the free one. Is there a big difference?
Yeah. A lot of the features that it will, as far as uninstalling stuff, like with the Pro, I can sit there and if I've got, say, 4 or 5 programs that I want to uninstall, I can just check them. Check them and then just say uninstall, and it will uninstall all 5 of them, after the other. The other service, which if you have multiple computers in your house...
No, I don't.
Oh, I was going to say, anybody out there that has multiple computers, I would suggest the version that you can download and put on a USB stick drive.
Is that I'm looking at it, the portable one?
Yep, the portable. Yeah. That way you can go from one computer to the other and run it. And it will clean it all up. So it's a good way, especially in a household, you got, you, your wife, and maybe some kids, and go around periodically and clean up all the remnants of a program that you don't want on there. The other Pro version will also go into a lot of this, like we've talked about before. The computers will be loaded with a lot of junk programs, stuff that gets preloaded. And programs, even with Windows, Xbox and, the other?
Yeah, whatever you buy.
It comes with a lot of extra baggage. Well, with the Pro version, you can go in there and clean all that stuff out also.
Yeah, is it pretty easy to use?
Very easy, very easy.
All right, then I'm going to get the Pro.
The other thing the Pro does is if you've removed software in the past, it may not, depending on what you use, it may not have removed all the little remnants. The Pro version will do that.
It cleans it all out, all the residue.
So it's easy. It says free trial, so I'm going to, do I click that or just the buy now?
Try the trial.
All right.
It'll nag you.
Oh, yeah. But I've owned it now for I forget how long it's been, a number of years, and I wound up going to the USB drive now because I've got a number of computers. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3.
Right, that's the Revo Uninstallable Pro Portable.
Yeah, I've got 6 different computers that I use, and I just go around. Of course, my Linux box doesn't.
That's what, $25 ish. Somewhere in that area, yeah.
And just put it down on a jump drive, and boom. And they're constantly updating it, too. That's the beauty of it, too.
All right, I'm going to buy the Pro one. Thank you for the information. I appreciate it.
Thanks, James. Yep.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Revo Uninstaller, the free version, only fully uninstalls 32-bit software, by the way. The Pro version does full 64-bit.
And the other thing about it, folks got, well, Windows will uninstall it for me. All Windows does is turn off one bit.
In the registry.
In the registry so that you don't see it. All those, if you'll be surprised, when you use Revo and have it go to remove a program, you know, it goes through and uninstalls it, makes a backup just in case you want to stop it. But once it's done uninstalling, all of a sudden you'll get this list of all these things in the registry that it wants to get rid of. And you just say select all and then delete. And it will clean them all up. That's shrinking your registry along with your file manager. It will show you where all the residued folders and subfolders of that program reside. And it will get rid of those also on a second screen.
People call all the time, like, my Windows is real slow to load. You go look at their machine, you say, well, you've got a 2 gigabyte registry.
Yeah.
Well, how many programs do you have? Only about a dozen, but I removed this. I didn't like that. I tried this.
Yeah, you tried.
Well, what happens is the registry grows and grows and grows and grows and never shrinks.
Yep.
And every time you load the registry, first you're loading 2 gigabytes worth of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, the system has to go through every entry in that 2 gigabytes of registry and decide whether or not to do anything about it. And so, yes, your system is going to be really slow to boot
up. What it is, folks, basically, it's seek time. You're telling it, you click on it and say, all right, I want to start this program. All right, and granted, it's only milliseconds, but sometimes it could take longer, that it's got to sit there and say, okay, where is it in this long, and I mean long, registry file? You know, how quick can it do it? Well, the shorter you keep that list,
the faster it works.
It's the faster it's going to work, and especially on older machines.
So something like Revo One Installer can, we're not saying it will, but it can shorten your boot time as well.
Yep.
Depending on
your system. It helps keep a good, clean, maintained machine.
Right. All right, here's a news item that may be of interest to you. A recent, and by the way, this is a brand new news item. This is not an old news item recycled. This is a brand new news item. A recent firmware update inadvertently left many HP OfficeJet users with devices that won't print. Again. And will only display a dreaded blue screen. No, this is not an old story. HP has broken its own printers with an update again. HP support forums are currently littered with users complaining that their printer is no longer functioning and that its screen has turned blue with an error code 83C0000B displayed. The issue goes back as early as May 8th. This issue seems to be mainly having an impact on owners of OfficeJet 902X printers. HP's customer service has confirmed that it's a firmware error happening everywhere in the world. Support threads show the problem reaching dozens of customers in the U.S., Australia, France, Germany, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Poland. HP has reportedly told customers the problem would be addressed or fixed at various dates throughout the month, but is yet to issue an official remedy or how to install it with a blue screen printer, leaving customers without a way to print on their printers, which they bought to print from HP, which only does printers well. Well, only does printers, but not necessarily
well. And
they're
losing all that money on ink and other commodities.
Delayed responses and purported promises to fix the problem at dates that have gone by have resulted in visible frustration in customers reconsidering HP products. HP shed a little more light on the situation in a statement.
Our teams are working diligently to address the blue screen error affecting a limited number of HP OfficeJet Pro 9020E printers. We are recommending customers experiencing the error to contact our customer support team for assistance at support.hp.com.
However, we still don't know when users will see a fix, why the firmware update was issued, or why the update broke HP's printers. It's bad enough for customers' printers to become bricks for weeks. Typically, when you want to print something, you need it in hand now, not whenever HP figures out its firmware issues. But on top of that, HP doesn't have a lot of grace left when it comes to abruptly issuing firmware updates, ruining customers' days. HP's poor handling of printer firmware updates over time can deter people from future updates that may be important. Meanwhile, HP has traumatized countless customers and many who will now think twice before depending on an HP printer again. How's your HP office, Jet? Give us a call, because that doesn't involve the printer. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. I got to be honest. I gave up HP years and years ago. I use Brother printers now. I've never had day one a problem with it.
Yeah.
HP used to make the best printers on the market. They made the laser jets.
Yep.
Yeah.
They made great printers. I mean, just absolutely great printers.
And they never died, and you never had to buy a new one.
You never died. You never had to buy a new one. And now they kill them on their own without your help. So you
have to buy a new one.
So you have to buy a new
good
one.
Good for them.
Well, I still have my HP 4000 NT.
Yeah.
Yep.
And trying to find the drivers for that.
Yeah, drivers are tricky.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a driver.
Generic PCL5, probably not even 6.
Yeah, and that's what I've had to do is because you go to their website. And, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you know, and what I paid for that printer back in the day,
yeah,
that was a few thousand bucks.
Every computer manufacturer or computer peripheral manufacturer has problems once in a while. I get that.
Yeah.
HP has a history of screwing up the updates for their own devices. I get it when Microsoft screws up an update. There are 100 million permutations of what the hardware looks like on any given machine. I absolutely understand that. However, when it is an update for the printer they manufactured, which has no additional things on it, This annoys me. And I think that I don't know what the heck is going on there, but they need to get their act together and they need to get it together yesterday. Updates that take your printers offline are unacceptable. When you make the update, you make the printer, you make the drivers. It's all you. That's unacceptable. Who does the testing? Who does the QA at that place? It's done. I don't know. The code ran. Send it out. We don't have to test it. It ran. Get your act together, HP. This is ridiculous.
They're taking it after Microsoft.
Yeah, this is like I've said time and time again, it annoys me when Microsoft does it, but they have an excuse. No two computers are alike. No two Microsoft computers are alike. And we get that. But HP OfficeJet 902 printers are all HP OfficeJet 902 printers. Ain't no difference nowhere. So, yeah, there's
and they can't blame it on using Windows drivers because it's their own particular driver for that unique printer.
It's an update to the firmware in the printer. It's not even the driver.
Yeah.
It's the update to the firmware in the printer. If they can't get that right on their own printers, they've got a real problem.
They're in a world of hurt.
And I personally, that's just one of several reasons I've stopped using HP devices. My Brother printer works every day, and it works for me, and it works for my wife, and it's all good for me, and that's the thing I'm happiest about. So,
and what's actually happening is people aren't printing as much as they used to anymore.
Right.
And if you use an inkjet printer, then those ink tanks dry out before you've printed through them. So companies are trying to make bigger ink tanks to make it cost less, but now you waste more ink when it dries out.
That's right. And they're happy with that.
Yeah.
That's why I have a laser printer. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. We are the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. and 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
So low, you can't...
Yeah, I couldn't hear it. 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. An Apple security fix in iOS 15.6.1 way back in August of last year was said to close two major security vulnerabilities, one of which could have allowed a rogue app to execute arbitrary code with kernel privileges, aka do very bad things. But it's now been revealed that the more serious vulnerability wasn't closed after all. Apple did succeed in blocking a specific way of exploiting the vulnerability, but didn't address the root cause until last week's iOS 16.5 update, some 9 months later, when Apple released iOS 15.6.1 in August of 2022. The company said the update provides important security updates and is recommended for all users. An application may be able to execute arbitrary code with kernel privileges. This was actively exploited by an attack dubbed Cold Intro. And Apple patched iOS against Cold Intro. Unfortunately, while Apple blocked the specific attack route used by Cold Intro, security researchers saw similar attacks succeeding even after the update. These fresh attacks used a variation on Cold Intro called Cold Invite. Analysis reveals that Apple has not blocked the underlying vulnerability which made such attacks possible. Apple did fix that vulnerability itself in iOS 16.5. This may not be as serious as it seems in first glance. It appears that the bad guys would need to fool you into installing their app, which may mean that the risk to the average user might seem low. On the other hand, so many people mindlessly click yes to every prompt they see that the likelihood of this thing growing is high. So it's always worth installing iOS updates as soon as possible. However, if you rely on Apple's Lightning to USB 3 adapter, which is broken in iOS 16.5, you can safely wait for a fix so long as you don't tap on links or open attachments. Good luck with that. How careless are you on your iPhone? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. And while you do that, we will talk to, is this the same James?
Yes.
James again from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Yes, quick. Thank you for taking a follow-up question.
Sure.
Quick follow-up question on the Revo. I'm uninstalling the McAfee Security Plus that got on my laptop by accident, and I clicked the uninstall. Now it says found leftover registry items, and it shows a bunch of boxes to be checked. Are these all for McAfee, or is this...
What do they say?
The first four are in red, my computer, software, Microsoft, and then it goes to a bunch of black things, and there's a whole bunch of boxes.
Registered
I don't know
keys.
If I'm supposed to check those or not.
Yeah, what you do is you say select all and then delete all.
So it should, so if you were telling Revo to uninstall McAfee, it should have found all the registry entries only for McAfee.
Okay, then that's the answer to my question. Select all and delete. Yeah. Correct.
Somewhere deep in that line that you probably can't read, buried in the key, it'll say McAfee somewhere.
So did you say uninstall McAfee, or did you just run it generally?
No, I uninstall the McAfee that got
okay,
on
okay, then
there
you should be fine.
It's going to do that for every program that you uninstall. It's going to show you all the files in the registry.
Mm-hmm.
And in the folder, file folder on the hard drive,
okay.
It's going to be two separate screens. On the first screen, it's going to be the registry. You say select all, and then check the delete all, and go on to the next screen. And then it'll go into the actual file system and do the same thing. Select all, delete all.
There is a separate function in Revo to scan your registry and look for orphaned keys for programs you've already removed.
Mm-hmm.
That you can run later. And then it will give you a bunch of different register keys from programs you used to have but don't have anymore.
Yeah, I just did the uninstall, and now it says you have uninstalled properly everything.
There you go. Good. Well great. Done.
Thank you. I didn't want to make a mistake. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, messing with the registry is always tricky.
Yeah, that's why we have never, nor will we ever, tell folks how to go into the registry and do any form of editing or cleanup or anything else.
Yeah. It's dangerous to play in the registry.
You got to know exactly what the heck you're doing, because all it takes is one fail, misclick, and especially when folks get click happy, that you can wipe out the registry and there goes your Windows from booting.
Yep.
We had an interesting call from a customer who's trying to get their Windows PC to connect to their Mac server over a VPN.
Wow.
And I found that the built-in Windows L2TP client doesn't work through NAT traversal.
Isn't that special?
Yeah. And there's a registry key you have to create and change to allow the Windows VPN client to work over NAT traversal that pretty much everyone uses.
And that's the reason you don't mess about in the registry. It is very, very powerful, mm-hmm. which means you can truly screw up badly.
So I wondered if that's why, if Microsoft did that on purpose, so you would buy, you know, like the Cisco VPN client or somebody VPN client.
Right.
Because Microsoft doesn't work right.
Because Microsoft doesn't work. Well, they've
shocking. Enhanced. Something in Microsoft doesn't work right.
And they will tell you they've enhanced the standard.
Yeah.
It does do the standard things, but they've enhanced it
so
to
it
not do
it
the
more.
Standard yeah. things. Yeah. Yeah, exactly right.
And they're hoping their dominance makes
so
that
they
the new standard.
Screw-ups with class.
Yeah. Yeah.
With style.
With style. So, yeah, there's the problem is that the internet, when Microsoft created Windows, there was no internet. And as we all know, famously, Microsoft was late to the party for the internet because they did not want to play with others.
It's just a fad. No one's going to like
that. Yeah, it'll be gone within a year.
I've said from day one, the purpose of computers is communication. We communicate with other people. Sometimes we're only absorbing their communication, mm-hmm. like when you're on YouTube for 5 hours a night, or TikTok or one of those. But it's communication.
Yeah, in Microsoft's mind, that was typing a letter in Microsoft Word, printing it, and handing it to someone.
That's right. It's exactly right. It's still communication.
Yeah.
Spreadsheets. You create a spreadsheet to communicate information.
Yep.
It's all computers do is communicate. The thing is, Microsoft didn't understand that when you can suddenly communicate with the entire world, that's a thing people want.
Yeah.
They want that. The other part of the problem is that, in fact, the internet was designed by a bunch of hippies who, and I use that term not pejoratively since I am one, who thought, you know, it should all be free, it should all be open, it should all be available to everybody. And then, of course, the bad guys get in and screw things up for everybody. So security became a problem. Of course, Microsoft Windows was not secure to begin with. DOS was not secure to begin with because there was no way anybody could get at it unless they were sitting at your machine anyway.
And then you're already screwed. So
then you're already screwed. Yeah. So the internet was originally designed with no security. And now we've been trying to tack security onto it for decades. And like I said in the first hour, you can send fully secured email. It's not only encrypted.
The contents of the message are secure, and you can trust the sender of the message.
Right. You know who sent it. So if Steve and I exchange public keys, public security keys, encryption keys, then I can send him a message that is encrypted. Dave could not read it because he doesn't have my public key. But Steve can read it because he has my public key. And because he can read it, he can be assured that it came from me because I'm the only person with my private key.
That's where that one commercial now for that WhatsApp.
Yeah.
That's a cool one, yeah. though.
The problem is that requires, at this point in time, that requires everybody to be able to exchange keys. That is not an easy thing these days. Mm-mm. There are a couple of public key rings that nobody knows how to use.
You can have a key party.
You can have a key. Oh, Steve. Or I can privately send, or I can send him my key, which is kind of okay. It's a public key. Anybody can have it. So that part is okay.
There were some questions about if you were in like a video chat. Is it secure enough to hold up your key to let them copy?
Right, right.
No.
But you could, it depends on the service you're in.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can send him that key, and then he can pretty much definitely say any message that is decryptable with that key is from me. Yeah. But then he has to be able to install it in his email reader. That is not an easy thing to do these days. Not for the average user. Certainly for many of the people listening it is. But for the average user, it is not. And so we are not yet at the point where it is easy to send and receive verifiable and secure email. Which is too bad, but that's the way
it is. That's the way life is.
Yeah, I like the most common program is PGP.
Right.
Pretty good privacy.
Pretty good privacy.
Here, Apple. I just found an article at Apple. Here's Apple's public key. It goes on and on and on and on.
Yeah, it should. Yeah. And on Linux, it's GPG, GNU Private Guard. I think the G.
Yeah, there's a Mac GUI version called GPG Tools.
Yeah. It's from GPG. It's the free version of PGP. And so you can install it and use it, but it is not an easy thing to do. It is certainly doable, but it is not easy. Until it's easy, most people aren't going to do it. Aren't going to be able to do it. So we're kind of at that point. Now,
we have trouble getting them just to back up their stuff.
Boy, that's the truth. As we've said before, if you are using the same email service like Gmail to Gmail, then your data are encrypted from the moment you type it to the moment they read it.
But
that doesn't mean it came from you.
Yeah.
So that the GPG does two things. It not only encrypts your email, but guarantees, or at least close to guarantees, that it came from you.
Authenticity.
Authenticity. It's both security and authenticity. And Gmail only provides one of those two things, security. So I can spoof Dave's email address and send out stuff to
anybody
I want. So, it's not that difficult. For example, many people use their ham radio ID as their email address.
Mm-hmm.
You know, k123@gmail.com or whatever those numbers are. I can write a program that generates 100 million of those.
Oh, yeah.
Send them all out as Dave and get him into trouble.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's a weekend project for me.
The usual prank was subscribing to mailing lists or filling out free magazine trials.
we did that to guys in our dorm.
Yep.
Back in the day when it was on paper. Oh yeah. You can imagine the types of magazines we subscribed them to. but you know, nowadays it's you can spoof somebody and get them into all kinds of trouble. A lot of teenagers are doing that when they want to harm a friend, an acquaintance. Mm-hmm. Somebody they don't like at school for whatever ephemeral reason that a year from now they won't remember.
Because they looked at you funny or something.
Right. So, having authenticatable email would fix that, but we are not there. Well, yeah, we are there, but it's not easy there. We need easy there.
Mm-hmm.
One of the hallmarks of things like Gmail or Apple Mail or any one of these is that it's easy to get started.
Mm-hmm.
You download the app or you just go to the website. You say, I want to be a member. Here's my username. okay, that one's not being used by somebody else. It's yours. Mm-hmm. Boom, here's your email address. Go. Real simple. Now, if we could then figure out a way to make authentication and security and encoding as simple as that, we'd be somewhere.
SPF and DKIM and SMTP auth and DMARC, and there's dozens.
Auth 2?
Yep, there's dozens of protocols that have been proposed, and each one works. It's the bad guys can say, well, I don't support that.
Yep.
And email falls back to plain text.
Yep, that's exactly right. And so...
Because there's some legitimate server somewhere in the east corner of who knows where that's 20 years old and only supports plain text unauthenticated mail.
Right. But if you could turn off plain text unauthenticated mail, you'd cut off a good third of the internet. Let's start there.
Yeah.
Garbage.
But you'd also then be able to secure everything you send. There's a couple of email services that let you create a fake email address and send out email and receive email. You just go online and say, okay, I want to be Dave Enright at rocket.com today.
Well, pretty much any email provider has an alias feature.
Right.
So you can have a second address that goes into your main mailbox.
Mm-hmm. I tried to explain that many, many years ago to a manager at a place I worked that our mail service was not secure. And he laughed at me. So I started sending him email from very rude addresses.
Yep.
And they were very rude emails. He came to me and said, somebody's hacked our system. I said, no, that's me.
Yeah.
Proving to you that anybody can spoof our email system. We need to upgrade it today.
It's very similar to postal mail,
yep.
But there are federal regulations against mail fraud.
Yeah.
And because you have to physically post something, it makes it easier to catch the bad guys.
Right. And you know, fingerprints and handwriting analysis and all that. None of that exists on a computer. None of it.
No.
So, and because you can programmatically generate billions of addresses.
A at Gmail, B at Gmail, C at Gmail.
Right.
Every possible letter combination. You'll find some.
A, B, A, C.
You'll find real ones.
Yeah. And you know, you can go up to 100 characters. Most of them. And then if you're even a vaguely smart, you send out an email and it bounces back and said, this person doesn't exist. Take them off the list.
Mm-hmm.
You go through that list once and then cull all the nulls out, now you've got a list that you can send to.
And if you really want to annoy Dave, you put him as the return address, and so he gets all those billions of bounce messages.
That's right. That's right. There's another weekend project for me. Dave's going to turn off every computer in the house and go hide in a corner.
Yeah.
No.
But yeah, so you know, you can. I mean, you have that on ham radio. What's to prevent me from getting on and saying, hi, I'm K something something?
Oh, yeah. You could do it all the time.
Yep.
And they've done it.
The FCC will eventually come down on you. But if I do it once, or if I do it from a company that the country that the FCC has no jurisdiction over, who stops me?
Yeah.
Who stops me?
No, they can't.
Because, again, there's no security and there's no authenticatability on the ham radio system. And the same is true of email. So.
Yeah, it's all honor system up there. As a matter of fact, they just fined a guy, what was it, $10,000 for he got a cheap Chinese radio. And he was trying to broadcast, because he was out in California, that there was the wildfires, and he was going on a public safety channel, which even hams don't belong on. It's for emergency use. And he kept broadcasting on it, and they kept telling him, you're not supposed to be on here. Well, they were trying to say, well, you know, he's trying to. No, it's not your job. You're doing something illegal. But he kept fighting with them. And he got fined $10,000.
Sure. And the government will make him pay that $10,000.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because he was doing it illegally, and he knew it.
And if I, but if I'm in many of the non-extradition, non-treaty countries in the world, and I've got a laptop and Python,
they're,
I'm golden.
Yo, yeah. That's what I say. Even on all these scams, you know, people are getting scammed out of money and all this other stuff. Once it's left the U.S., and if it's over in Nigeria or wherever, sorry, the government isn't going to be able to get it back for you.
That's exactly right.
Kiss it goodbye.
That's because, exactly right.
You know, you didn't do due diligence and you just went ahead with your gut feeling and did this or that. They can't help you for that.
Then that's you have right. to call Interpol, which I was just so disappointed to realize a few years ago that it meant international police. It was always this, you know, amazing organization in the movies. Better call Interpol. International police.
That's all it is.
Yeah. About as effective as one hand clapping.
Yep.
Yeah. So they have
a lot of people now. A lot of people use temporary email services legitimately.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if I want to go look at something and it says, "Oh, you have to sign up." Okay, I'll go to tempmail.com and get a 10-minute email address, or tempmail.org. temp-mail.org, I think it is, and get an email address that only works for 10 minutes. I sign up. They send me a code. I go read the email, the news item that I wanted to read, and I'm done.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can also do that in not 10-minute disposable emails.
Create just a garbage, a junk email address.
You can do that on Gmail. You can say,
that's what I say. I've got
go into M-Pass. And say, create me a 20-character password, then copy that and say, that's my Gmail address. Is it available? Yes, it is. Okay, you now have that Gmail address.
Yeah, and just use that as garbage, you know, a garbage collector. Because, you know, and it's a good way to also, when you set up these accounts that you use just for, you go to different websites and, you know, they want your email address. Well, you can give them that one. And then you can slowly see over time if all of a sudden that email address is getting populated with other junk, who they sold it to.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And that's always the fun. I like
that. Yep. There's also duck.com has an interesting service. You can use it as a forwarder. So DuckDuckGo, theoretically, very secure, very safe, very... gets rid of all the trackers and other junk that's in your system. So you can get an email address at duck.com. And what it does is any email that comes to it gets stripped of all the nonsense and forwarded to your real email address. And then when you reply through it, it goes to duck.com and then goes from duck.com to them so they never see your real email address. So it's I've used it to sign up for some things that I knew were going to be fine in terms of, not getting a lot of spam or on any of that stuff. But I didn't want to be tracked by them. So I used that, my duck.com address to do that. And you can create any address you like, and it works pretty nicely, actually. I use it fairly regularly for certain things, and it seems to work quite nicely. So there are ways to get anonymous email. There are ways to get clean email. But there's no way to get authenticated email. Again, I can create any address I like at duck.com and hide who I really am behind it. So for authentication purposes, something like GPG or PGP would be the thing you'd want to use. But again, not easy to do. We hope that will change over time, but right now, not that easy to do. All right, that music tells us that we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. Thanks to Dave Enright, to Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest, well, you're still listening for another minute or so, to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And we continue to be truly grateful to each and every one of you who has become a member, because we are so solely, and I ain't kidding when I say solely, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Save up your questions, write them down, and don't forget to give us a call next week. We'll be right back here. Oh, we will not be back here next week, will we? Next week is we're off next week. There will be a temporary show, but we will see you in 1 week and 166 hours.